What kind of pain is she in?
Mental trouble.
Mental trouble. Uh-huh. Very painful, especially with mental trouble, as you say. We have to be able to resolve our own mental trouble before we can be of benefit to others. Otherwise, there are two people with maybe varying degrees of mental trouble, and very often then that exaggerates the mental trouble of each. Have you noticed that? When there are a couple of people together with mental trouble. So you see, this is the importance of the self-benefit of awareness and growing strong in the self-benefit of awareness by just taking the time and space to grow strong in the self-benefit of awareness, then it enables us to be in any circumstance at all. Whereas initially, in the beginning of gaining confidence and awareness, it might be very difficult for us to be in some situations, and that's okay. However, as we grow stronger in awareness, then it's easier to be in those same situations. But we should at least allow ourselves the time and the space to grow strong and self-benefit. And you're young, so you see, you have plenty of time for this.
I'm so trained in affirmation and healing and coaching. It's almost like automatic in me, this like, can I really let go of that? Can I let go of the doing in it? It feels hard to let go of me.
My diagnosis for this patient is that there have been too many books and other people insisting that you are someone, and so then you pick that up yourself, this insistence that you are someone. And so how would it be if you didn't have to be someone, but you didn't have to be no one either? And you see, this is the beauty of resting. You don't have to get into either of these thorny points of view, being someone or being no one, because neither one of them is anything but a concept. So what I see has occurred for you is that you're very interested in being free, and you're very interested in helping other people too, and this is what your life is all about. And this is true, I'm sure, for everyone in the room. And so you have been seeking throughout your life. You've been seeking to know as much about yourself as you can and see what you can find out about that, and then somehow reach a conclusion about it. Now, in that course of seeking, you finally arrived at a place where people told you that the I was the problem. The I, me, and mine, that is the problem, and you have to somehow get rid of this I. So this has been part of the search. But you see, the training you received in being an I and the training you received in not being an I, those are both points of view. So it's this that resting allows you to go beyond. Because you see, if we look for what is nothing, or if we look for what is something, either one of those concepts doesn't have an independent identity. It doesn't have anything that makes it definitively conclusive. It has no origin of its own. And so this is the basis of confusion, thinking that either one of those is something that needs to be fostered. And so you see, one of the great sorrows in non-dual teachings today is that teachings say, yes, we are a non-dual teaching. And then at this, in the next breath, they say, okay, now you got to get rid of your ego or your personality. Well, you see, those two don't go together. It's like oil and water. They don't go together. They really do not go together. Non-duality and getting rid of anything, it just doesn't go together. What would there to be? What would there be to get rid of? And so you see, it's speaking with forked tongue. Now, I'm confident that if you continue to relax, then all this will resolve itself. Mm-hmm. I've definitely see this be the case for many other people who have been in your shoes. So the healing, the ultimate physician and healer, like it says in the inquiries, is in awareness. That's where the ultimate healing takes place. That's the basis or ground of all healing. It's just like the things we learn. Other than that, when we first learn them, we have great hopes for them, whatever it might be. Meditation, you mentioned positive affirmations, or coaching in order to be our best self, or all of these things, when we start out with them, our innocent hope is that this is going to solve all my problems, right? We hear about this positive affirmation, so yeah, this is going to solve all my problems. And we start in right away. I am happy. I am healthy. I am rich and famous, or whatever the affirmations are. And for a while, we can feel some energy from that. Oh, wow, this feels good. Because we probably didn't even know we could cultivate positive thinking. And so for a while, the positive thinking helps and it feels good. But then something happens out of the blue and the positive thinking doesn't work. And so then our hopes are devastated, for the positive thinking as some kind of ultimate solution. And it's the same way then with every form of self-help we approach. Coaching, the same thing. Non-dual teachings that talk about getting rid of anything within non-duality. It's kind of a flawed premise. And meditation, sitting for years and years and years and making very little headway. And then what automatically goes along with that is that there's something wrong with me. It's because there's something wrong with me. And so, you know, what we really all need to do is return to this great simplicity of what we are. And this is really what Phaedrus addressed in his question. It's just that total simplicity that's at the basis of everything. But it's only gone unrecognized because we forgot how to rest. We forgot how to just allow everything to be at rest. Now, when we start to rest, it really feels like we're resting only because we're accustomed to thinking that we're doing something. But that doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter, because resting resolves all points of view, including the point of view of the one resting. So in the end, we just go, oh, tee-hee. You know, there's doesn't need to be anyone resting. There's just an awareness involved in all these perceptions. Wherever perceptions are, that's where awareness is. It's no big deal. So you see, this is the fundamental comedy. And the more confident we become in at resting, the more we see that it doesn't matter what the perception is. Awareness has never been made into that thing. So in the beginning, we're dead serious, you know, and it's all about me, and I'm resting, and I'm resting with all my points of view that are coming up that are about me. But then everything gets more and more spacious the more we rest, and pretty soon we start to see that awareness, it's our primary identity, and it's never been made into anything. Awareness reflexively arises within the basic state of everything. And everything that is known about the basic state and everything that appears within it is due to awareness. So we find ourselves becoming more and more spacious and less tied to what we thought we were as a primary identity. So, you know, we release this idea of being made into somebody, the I, me, and mine. And then we, by resting, we see, well, we've really never been anywhere. We've never been anything. We've never needed anything conceptual in order to be. And this is just the nature of the basic state. The basic state is without any conceptual effort. There was no conceptual effort for the basic state to come about. It just is. It simply is. It's completely free of conceptual efforting, yet it includes all conceptual efforting. So you see, it doesn't need to be. And it also includes non-conceptual states, not just conceptual. But it's never made into either of these. As soon as something conceptual appears, it disappears. It doesn't have any substantiality. It's never been anything. By resting, this becomes totally clear. It's just like all of the things that we take for granted, all of the assumptions we take for granted about being flesh and blood, and that we live on the earth, and we breathe air, and we drink water, and we do all these things. And for a while, for our entire life, most of us believe that that's what we are. But when we start to rest, all that loosens up. We see that awareness isn't a place. It's not only not made into somebody. It's never made into anything. It's never made into an earth or any other planet. It's never made into anything at all. And so you see, experientially, then we go through a deep reconsideration of who we are. And this is the importance of the instinctive experiential being of awareness. It has to be instinctively realized or instinctively experienced. It can't just be a bunch of talk. And so this is how we come to the definitive experiential conclusion within ourselves, just in each perception, as your whole idea about the world is reconsidered in the space of rest. Then you see, well, yeah, I really like these positive affirmations for a while, but now I really see they're getting me nowhere. So, you know, we get to be that honest about ourselves with a good laugh. Because, positive affirmations, they're not going to help us when we're on our deathbed. So we want to know that we find something in life that can help us all the way through life and up on our death as well. And that really is awareness. Awareness is all that is going all the way, and all these perceptions. There isn't anything else. Now, when we die, we don't have the ability to conceptualize any longer. So the whole point of view of life completely disappears as though it never was. However, in the process of death, our whole way of perceiving everything completely breaks down. Each one of our senses shuts down, but we're still aware. So you see, this could be very scary if we've only known about our flesh and blood identity. When we lose our ability to feel something when we touch it, or to smell, or to hear, or to taste, or to see, all these completely fade and they're of no use to us anymore. That can be very frightening if we've thought that those are our identity or what we perceive ourselves to be. So gradually all of this fades away. We lose any sense of being able to feel emotion, any kind of emotion about anything. And then we lose our ability to think about anything, but we're still aware. And so you see, it can be very difficult if we don't know that. And if we do know that, then death is easy and peaceful. But you know, the dying person is in a very unique position from point of view, because usually the dying person doesn't have anyone else to relate to. There isn't another dying person right there dying with them. There's no peer support. And so there's a person who is in a completely different world of points of view trying to communicate with people in another world, so to speak. But what we found in great freedom is that due to the power of awareness, people can die very peacefully and easily and be surrounded by people who understand what's going on. So you see, there's nothing to worry about with all your, whether you like yourself or you don't like yourself, it really doesn't matter. Whether you've done good things or you've done bad things, or you've done a combination of the two, it really doesn't matter. All of these are absent of an individual identity. So if you've spent your whole life trying to shape yourself into a good person, which you obviously have, and trying to stay away from the bad, then, but you know, some of us unavoidably, we slip into doing all kinds of harmful things, even bad things. And so does that mean that we're a total failure and loser and irredeemable? No, it just means it's another way of identifying ourselves. Both are equally freed up in awareness. And sometimes it's easier for a person who has done harmful and bad things to find relief in awareness, because that gets to be very painful. You know, there's a story about a great, great teacher who lived at one time, and he murdered 30 people, and they were all his relatives that he didn't like. And, you know, I'm not suggesting that to anyone, but he became one of the greatest teachers who ever lived. He reached a point where he was just in so much suffering around all the dire deeds that he'd perpetrated, that he went to his teacher, a teacher, and he said, "Help me, you know, help me. I cannot live with the way I've been. And it is so totally painful to me. I don't know what to do." So the teacher gave him a few things to do. You know, they were lots of doing that ended in nothing, basically. The teacher would say, okay, now I want you to build me a house. So he'd work for about 4 or 5 years building a house, and then the teacher would destroy it. He'd say, okay, now build me another house. But through this, he was able to see that no matter what appeared, it was equal. So you see, there was teaching going along with all these pursuits. And whatever appears to us about ourselves, whether we think of ourselves well or not, or whether it's a combination of both, each one of those is equal of an independent identity. And, you know, that can be kind of scary to us if we've been accustomed to cultivating positive states. Cultivating positive states may be better socially than cultivating negative states, but they're equally traps. Now that's interesting, isn't it? They're both big traps. However, if you are going to insist on doing something and having an identity, then definitely cultivate positive states. But if you don't want to put that much effort into life, then start resting. Now, today there are many, many people who are ready to rest. That hasn't been true throughout most of time. And throughout most of the history of humankind, people really haven't had the ability to do that. They due to pervasive superstitions about all kinds of things. But now humankind is in a state where we're much less superstitious. And we can even, through our own efforts, perform a miracle of showing that things don't exist in something called a particle accelerator. A particle accelerator, it's just a magical, skillful means for showing that something doesn't exist. That's all it is. And we try to make it into something by calling it science. But, you know, we're missing the point. We're missing the point. If we continue to insist that there's something that exists in there. I saw a short film of an interview with someone who worked in a linear accelerator. And he was talking about how he was there once at 3 a.m. and they'd been watching the accelerator and the graphs that were depicting what was going on in it for days, and nothing was happening at all. He was there alone at 3 a.m. and all of a sudden something happened. And he said, wow, there is something in there. You know, there really is another particle we've never seen before. Of course, it could have been an earthquake or something. And he said, there I was. You know, what do you do in a situation like that? Do you call the people you've been working on the research with and say, oh, you know, wow, we found something here? Or do you call your worst enemy and say, sucker, you know, look what I did? He said all of a sudden there I was, one of 6 billion people, and I was the only person who had seen this. Anyway. To rest or not to rest, that is the question. What do we do when all of our proofs lead us to the non-existence of phenomena? that phenomena, we can't really say that they don't exist, and we can't say that they do exist either. Not either one. And so you see the great perception accelerator, so to speak, is our own body, with this constant proliferation and stirring of all these points of view called our perceptions. There's no way to clearly see what's going on unless we completely relax ourselves into the ultimate nature of what we are, just the basic state of all our perceptions, which is awareness. If we can allow ourselves to do that, then we open ourselves up to a hidden source of intellectual, verbal, and emotional and physical power. And we can either have a little of that or a lot, depending on how willing we are to encounter all of our perceptions in a free manner. So that includes all our cherished perceptions about everything we think we are, if we think we're a victim, and then we get to take a lot of time to relax with that. If we think we're just great, you know, we've spent our whole time being Miss Pollyanna, flights of fancy, flying around everywhere, you know. We get to see all that too. But in this, or anything in between, but in that we settle down into total solidity. We settle down into maturity and solidity, ultimate maturity and solidity as a human being, where we really can be of benefit to ourselves and others. And it's so simple. You know, all of this, everything I'm saying is a bunch of cheap talk if you don't have the experience of what I'm saying. It's cheap talk. It's absolutely worthless. Well, it might be soothing, but, you know, and if you listen long enough, in fact, it might become permanently soothing. But you'd have to get through all your points of view about me and the cheap talk and everything else, you see. But if you just kept listening, you'd end up being okay. So it doesn't really even require resting if you don't want to. Like, some people here haven't rested at all. They've just listened to the talks. And the way we become so absorbed in the confusion and delusion of points of view is just by listening. We listen to people and we go, oh, yeah, that's the way it is, I guess. Yikes. The reality of who we are, it's just very simple. So totally simple. You're doing great. All the preoccupations you have, you see, it doesn't matter whether you do them or not, whether you're involved in them or not. By resting, you'll be able to see everything about it very clearly. For people who want to help other people, it just comes down to the question, how can I be most helpful to other people? Is it going to be helpful to teach other people about antidotes when I know about awareness? How is that going to be helpful? Is it going to be helpful to me in my life? Is it going to be helpful to them? So you see, no one else can tell you when to do this or how to do this. It's just in your own experience you need to just get real in awareness, get real in awareness. So you get to see everything, you know, you get to see how you manipulated yourself and how you've manipulated others and how you may be manipulating others right now. But it's all okay. It's all okay because it's just completely free in its own place. I'm not saying this to you personally, by the way, you know, but if it applies to any of you, you'll know it. And so it's very easy, and it's very gentle, and it's very tender. There isn't anyone standing over you saying, oh, well, you better look at this point of view. You're all too familiar with what your points of view are. And you see, this is the beauty of resting as awareness. In resting as awareness, you're able to see. You're able to see so clearly how you've allowed these points of view to rule your life. And it's a very tender, gentle, unfolding process. For you, anyway. Other people may need a good kick in the ass now and then, but you probably don't. When, through the process of gaining confidence and awareness, we become more and more freed up from all these perceptions, then life is just so enjoyable. It's really a lot of fun, and then who knows what's possible.